now to a very different kind of story about domestic violence. No one expected Catherine Stewart's life to turn out the way that it did. Not her parents, not her friends, nor her teachers, and especially not Catherine herself.
The last thing anyone who knew Catherine growing up would have predicted would have been that she would find herself thrown through the air across her kitchen by her husband, the object of a rage that could only be called murderous. In fact, it would have been so far from their imagining that it wouldn't have been the last thing, but no thing at all, not even occurring to them to rank below the rest.
That's Alan Johnson reading from The First Thing and the Last, his book about the horrors of domestic violence and the healing needed to help victims reclaim their lives. First, a warning here that we're about to enter a topic that may not be appropriate for children. Alan Johnson is a sociologist who's published nearly a half dozen nonfiction works, including books on race, gender, and other forms of social inequality. But The First Thing and the Last is his first novel, one that Publishers Weekly called a moving, engaging read. Oprah Winfrey's O Magazine listed it as one of its great reads. Alan Johnson joins us now in our studio.
Thank you.
Who is Catherine Stewart, and what happened to her?
She is a intelligent, well-educated, sensitive, artistic woman who falls in love with a man who is charming, attentive to her. What she does not realize is that beneath that is an obsession with control that eventually takes the form of violence, but when it's too late.
And on the surface, her husband, David, seems decent enough. He's educated. He lovingly courts Catherine. Mm-hmm. He appears to be a good father to his young son, Nathan. He plays with him, reads to him. But when David drinks, he loses his mind. Tell me, where do men like David come from?
David is, in many ways, is a typical man. Not in the sense that I'm saying that the typical man beats up women, but that he has an obsession with control. So David is a man who takes this to an extreme. And he resorts to physical and verbal violence. And what people who've worked with batterers have found is that the obsession with control is so intense that when they feel that control threatened, especially when women do what everyone says they're supposed to do, which is they try to leave, that men experience what these workers have called a fatal peril. They really feel endangered, as if they're going to die if they can't maintain this control. And that the violence acts as a kind of restorative for them. And so David is not crazy. He's not a monster. He is resorting to violence in order to accomplish what I think he believes every man is supposed to be able to demonstrate, which is that he's in control of his woman.
Why didn't Catherine leave?
One of the main reasons, the most immediate reason that women don't leave is that they can't. They don't have the money. They have children, small children perhaps. They have nowhere to go. They don't have money to rent an apartment. And if they did, they wouldn't be safe, which is the second big reason, is they're frightened to go. The time when a woman is most likely to be murdered by her abusive spouse is when she tries to leave. When women choose to stay in these situations, they're making a rational choice based upon their security needs and the security needs of their children.
In your book, Catherine did try to leave David once.
Yes.
She goes to her parents' home, obviously beaten, seeking help. Her mother essentially blames her for this. David shows up, her husband shows up, her father does nothing. They mm-hmm. just lets him take her and his grandson away. I mean, is denial a common reaction from the outsiders who are looking in?
I think denial is as epidemic as domestic violence is. I think families are so much wanting these things to go away, for them not to be true, that they even turn out family members who are at risk. This happens with sexual abuse. Very often when the person who's been sexually abused brings it up in the family, they get attacked by the family for creating conflict and distress. There's just a massive amount of denial. And I think part of the reason for that is there is such a strong perception that families in which this happens are bad and that the women are somehow deserve this. There's something flawed in them. So there's a tremendous amount of shame.
David takes Catherine back home after this. Mm-hmm. He threatens to kill her and Ethan if she ever leaves again. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Catherine knows there's no safety anywhere anymore.
Yes.
that all the years of trying to contain her husband's rage, try to shelter her son, mm-hmm. it's over.
Yes. I mean, I think there is a moment when Catherine realizes that she's being held prisoner. And this is a very common theme in domestic violence situations. So it's not just a matter of violent actions, you know, I slap you or I throw a plate at you or something. But what we're talking about here is a whole pattern where women are literally held prisoners in their homes, and very often with the children held hostage.
Alan, you describe Catherine's plight in a paragraph that closes chapter 3 of the book. Can you read that for us?
Yes, be happy to. Her sole refuge became a numb and frozen place inside herself where time and feeling stopped, suspended above her body while he beat or raped her, focused only on the simple goal of staying alive from one moment to the next, deflecting the blow, stanching the flow of blood, presenting the smallest possible target, saying nothing that might fuel what raged all about her, wondering if Ethan could hear, and praying that he would stay in his room just one more time.
So this abuse of Catherine continues until one fateful night of unspeakable violence that changes everything, Alan. What happened?
David's rage escalates beyond what it had ever been before, and Ethan comes downstairs against Catherine's prayers that he stay upstairs, and he can't resist because he thinks there's something wrong. Of course, there is, and he comes downstairs, and Catherine asks David to give Ethan to her. And he does by picking Ethan up and throwing him across the kitchen. And then he realizes what he's done, and he comes after Catherine to annihilate her. And by some chance, she is able to kill him before he kills her.
Alan Johnson, author of The First Thing and the Last, his debut novel about domestic violence. It's the story of Catherine Stewart, who after years of abuse kills her husband David after a night of horrific violence that leaves her badly beaten and her son Ethan dead at the hands of his father. Alan, as Catherine is recovering from her wounds, she meets an elderly woman who has read a newspaper account of what happened to Catherine. She shows up unannounced in Catherine's hospital room. This is Lucy Dudley, who convinces Catherine to come and live with her. And as we learn, Lucy and Catherine have much in common.
Yes, and Lucy comes from a family farm where she lives by herself in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and reads about Catherine and literally comes after her, even though she doesn't really know why she's going down there until she gets there.
And there's a scene that really sums up what Lucy is able to give to Catherine. Set that up for us and read the last bit of that scene.
Yeah, Lucy is providing a place where Catherine can rediscover who she is, can discover what hasn't been taken from her irrevocably, and begin to reclaim those smallest choices that are wrapped in fear if you're in a domestic violence situation. And she notices that Catherine doesn't take any baths, and Lucy just has an old clawfoot tub looking out over the hills, and Catherine tells her a story of her husband trying to drown her in the tub, and she never took a bath after that. So Lucy says, all right, I have an idea, and takes her upstairs and draws the bath. And so in this little part here, Catherine is lying in the bathtub, and Lucy is reading to her from Annie Dillard's A Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. Catherine sinks down, closing her eyes, and for just a moment feels safe in the arms of the old woman sitting by the door. She drifts into half-sleep and then opens her eyes to the sound of Lucy's voice and bubbles breaking in the cool air above the tub. Lucy, she says, in a sleepy voice. Yes, dear. Would you open the door a little? Of course. How are you doing in there? Fine. There is a long silence, and then, Lucy, Catherine's eyes beginning to fill. What? How did you get to be the way you are? One bath at a time, honey. One bath at a time.
What's the connection between these women?
Oh, I think Lucy is the grandmother crone archetype. She comes in to rescue Catherine from hell. And of course, Lucy has a history of her own around this. She knows a lot about what Catherine's been through, and she also knows she can't save her.
And it's clear that Lucy needs Catherine as much as Catherine needs Lucy.
Yes.
And this is because Lucy has a secret.
Yes.
That she's been reluctant to tell even Catherine.
Yes. In some ways, she is waiting for Catherine so that she can tell her things that she hasn't dared tell anyone else.
Early on in the novel, as David's abuse of Catherine is beginning, he finds and he burns a collection of poems that Catherine has written over the years, and she is totally devastated by this. It destroys her in a way that rivals the physical abuse. And it's interesting in Vermont, when she's with Lucy and she's slowly healing, Catherine starts writing again.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how important it is for people who have been abused to go back and to reclaim something that's been taken away from them by their abuser.
Domestic violence is all about literally taking away people's lives. And David burning Catherine's poetry is a kind of attempted soul murder. So in a sense, his obsession with control, the counterpart to that is her complete lack of control over anything, inner or outer, in her life. So an essential part of post-traumatic stress disorder is this sense of danger can come from any direction at any moment, so there's no place for you to settle down inside yourself.
Right.
There's no stillness. There's no quiet space, including a space in which to create something of beauty. And so for Catherine, that came out in her poetry. And so her halting beginning attempts with Lucy's encouragement to simply re-encounter those parts of herself that she might experience again with some autonomy.
This novel feels so real and so authentic, and I know that's the reaction that you get from people.
Yes.
Publishers Weekly, in describing your novel, The First Thing and the Last, called the prose, quote, lyrical, the characters sympathetic, the story convincing. But it took you 7 years, Alan, to get this novel published.
Yeah.
You were rejected by 60 publishers. What did they tell you when they turned you down?
Well, a lot of them just tell you, you know, little reasons that they just make use of when they don't know what else to say to you. But the most consistent, repeated response was that they had a problem with the violence. They would say things like, the violence was a little too real for me, which I have to say as an artist, that totally throws me. I don't understand what they're saying, because we work very hard to be able to write things that ring true.
I guess that's the ultimate compliment.
That's the ultimate compliment, and that's their reason for rejecting it.
We don't want to give the ending away, but in the end, how do you see your novel? Is it a tragic story? Is it a hopeful story? And in what ways do you see Catherine's story resonating beyond her personal struggles?
Well, there are aspects to it that are terrible and tragic. I will never get over what happened to Ethan. And life is full of such things. They happen to people all the time. For Catherine, I feel that things are possible. What's possible in the wake of such terrible things? And the answer is something, not nothing. And Lucy is the one who helps her to see that. Lucy doesn't solve anything for Catherine. She doesn't save her, but Lucy allows Catherine to see that something is possible here. She will never be the same again. She will never get back what was taken from her. And a life is possible.
Alan Johnson is author of The First Thing and the Last, his debut novel about domestic violence. By the way, where did the title come from?
My favorite poet, Jane Kenyon. It's a poem called Walking with the Dog at Sunrise, about trying to figure out what to say to a young friend whose husband has died and is in grief. And the line from the poem is, searching for God is the first thing and the last, but in between, such trouble and such pain.
For more on The First Thing and the Last, go to our website, hereandnow.org. Alan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Next week on Here and Now, Hardwick, Vermont is booming, driven by a local food movement. The irony is the locals can't afford to buy the food. We speak with a farmer journalist about the lessons. News is next, Here and Now.